Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, so we're still with Eliyahu HaNavi, the great prophet of Israel, and we're in the middle of an interesting discussion, whether or not he completed his mission and whether things would continue, how they would continue in the same way. We discussed this a little bit. I guess we'll do it again because it's very significant. One idea that we constantly have is that even great people are not perfect people. And again, that's a Jewish idea. If you look around in the world, and one of the reasons you realize the other religions are so phony is because their people are perfect people, and we know it's not true. But I hate to criticize Eliyahu HaNavi because it's not up to us to criticize him. But Hashem kind of spoke to him. Our tradition has it that part of the job of the prophet was to bring the people back to Teshuvah and to rebuke them, but also it was to serve as an advocate for them. Now, that's hard. It's hard to look at people and say, you're sinning, you're not listening, you're a lot of... and at the same time, when advocate on their behalf. And the answer is that when a person rebukes somebody, it always has to be from love. It has to be because you care about them. You don't want them to ruin their life. You don't want them to make a mistake. And so, for example, Moshe Rabbeinu, who was the head of the prophets, he could tell the people that you've done wrong, you've done this, you've done that. So Hashem said, I've had it with the Jewish people. I'm going to wipe them out and start over with you. And he said, no way. In other words, he advocated on their behalf. He was the... and so really that ideal... A situation would have been that when Hashem came to Eliyahu and Hashem said, what are you doing here? So Eliyahu says, oh, I'm zealous for you, and the people don't listen, and they know that. So then Hashem again repeats, what are you doing here? And he doesn't get it. In other words, what Hashem is saying to him is, yes, you have to be aware of their sins. Yes, you have to rebuke them. Yes, it's a difficult situation. But he almost speaks about the soft voice. It's almost a message that we don't, there is a time for a certain harshness, but that if a person, a prophet has a difficult job because he gets up there and he speaks and he says, don't do idol worship, and the people say, Hashem Elohim, and what happens? The next day, they go right back. And so it's very easy to be frustrated. And so Hashem's message to him is that you keep on speaking, you don't get upset, you stay in a soft voice, and you will see it'll have an effect. And that's, like we mentioned, that's why he gets the job to come to our Brisim and our Pesach Seder. Who would have thought, 2,000 years ago, there's no other nation that's still keeping their traditions from thousands of years ago. There's no other people. And yet today you go, and you go to a Bris, and there you have the chair of Eliyahu. We even give him a chair, right? That's right. Or you have a Pesach Seder, no matter, in the most far-flung places, you have Jews that keep, that hold on to the covenant. And so that's the message that Hashem gives to him. We will read it again. It is understood on different levels. And like we said, we obviously can't criticize Eliyahu. This was a... there are certain personalities that are zealous, and there are other personalities that are maybe more of a teacher, have more patience for, that kind of study. In a certain way, that's how we understand that Eliyahu is to appoint his disciple. At the point where Eliyahu feels that he no longer can speak softly and have the patience to do it, so now it's time to appoint his disciple. Now it's the time to... but let's take a look at it again.
Doesn't Hashem say it again? You can't hide yourself away in a cave and separate yourself from everybody. This is not where you're going to fulfill your mission.
It could be that was the message. What are you doing here?
Buddy, out in a cave in the middle of the desert. Yeah. I mean, you're not doing any good here.
Yeah, that's the that definitely is the now the. In the one view is it that Eliyahu was Pinchas, so either Pinchas lived a long life, or it's not a contradiction to say that he's the same chip off the old block. There's an idea, a Kabbalistic idea, that we are the same souls. In other words, that there's a certain kind of soul, and different people are created from that mold. And so most of us, they say, it's not the first time around. Meaning that there may have been somebody who was created from that same spark in a different time, in a different generation, and we are not a totally new kind of person. And we might even be here to fix some of the problems we had in that different spark, some kind of reincarnation. Once we get into those ideas, these are things that none of us can speak to with total expertise. And so I'm always reluctant to, you know, somebody says, you know, you're reincarnated from this. But the idea that you had that zealous personality in that generation and that Eliyahu was Pinchas, he's that same mold. Was he actually the physical same person that lived a long time? Well, maybe. I don't have a problem saying that, you know, he lived. Or does it mean that Hashem saw that every generation needed that kind of person? That person who would stand up against the evildoers, and that person who would be zealous for Hashem. Every generation needs that, and every generation needs its Eliyahu. We need Eliyahu. Now, some people, there's an understanding that he kind of became like an angel. This idea of flying up to—he's one of the most mystical people. We did have Moshe Rabbeinu going up to the heavens. And not eating for 40 days and 40 nights. And that's why people thought he was dead at the golden calf, because you couldn't live on a mountaintop without food and water for 40 days. And so the people were sure. Some people say that they had a scouting party to go up by the golden calf looking for Moshe, and they saw him lying there lifeless. Because his soul, when he went up to heaven, heaven is not a physical place. That's why when the Russians went up to the first spacecraft and they said, "We don't see the angels," they were right, because they didn't go to heaven. In other words, heaven is a spiritual place. And so if when we say a person who's alive goes to heaven, it means that their spirit went up to heaven. But Moshe Rabbeinu's body was still there. And so the scouting party saw Moshe's lifeless body sitting there, you know, without food or drink, and they reported back that he had died. And so naturally the people were terrified. But they didn't realize that Moshe Rabbeinu was talking to Hashem and getting the Torah. And so that's it's difficult for us to know what these concepts mean. So I get nervous when somebody says, yeah, you know, he's an angel, he's a person. I know definitively what these things are, because whenever you get an area that's God's area, we don't know 100%. But there are people... in our lifetime, people that have felt that Eliyahu came to them, that they, you know, they were at this mysterious time when they were in need of help, and somebody appeared, and a lot of times, who was that masked man? You know, who was the one who, you know, I once had ran out of gas. I had gotten a different car. And in my old car, when it was on empty, you still had a little bit of 2 gallons. And so I was in an area where I thought I was fine, because it just didn't. But the new different model car that I had, you have to be very careful with it, because on certain model cars, empty is really empty. And then other, and so I discovered that, and I was stuck on the side of the road in the middle of nowhere. And a trucker stops by. I was terrified, you know, this big, tall truck. And he helped me. He got me gas, and he was as sweet and kind as could be. And he, you know, drove around and picked me up and took me, you know. And he was he Eliyahu? Hashem sent him to help me. I don't care if he was Eliyahu. I don't even know. I certainly prayed that Hashem helped me out. This was before cell phones. You know, we go to these factories in the middle of nowhere. So is Eliyahu the one that helps us? Who comes out of, you know, out of the blue when we, maybe. We believe that Hashem sends everybody. In other words, that everything happens for a reason. And if we're in trouble and Hashem happens to send us the messenger, is it actually Eliyahu, or is it some other messenger that Hashem sent? Maybe, you know, we don't really know. What?
Does it matter?
It doesn't. No, it doesn't. It doesn't really matter. And that's the point. In other words, sometimes when a person likes to say, you know, God, Eliyahu is an angel, he's a person, this person's Eliyahu, this person, we don't know these things. But it's the fact that they're possible, and that allows us to see that from time to time in a situation where no one is expected, Hashem sends that messenger to save us. Whoever that may be, it could be a doctor that comes along that just happens, it could be a nurse, it could be a person who's out of gas and someone comes who's not expected to be there, it could be, but these are all things that Eliyahu did, and so That image is still with us of the Eliyahu that the entire nation was given over to idolatry, and he appeared to help people. The widow who had no food left, you know, he came to help her, and so that's the. But over here, even Eliyahu gets a dressing down, so to speak, because he talks about the zealousness, and we talked a little bit last week about the idea that Hashem likes. At the same time that a person is zealous for Hashem, he has to be zealous for the Jewish people. He has to advocate on their behalf. This is another way to find favor in Hashem's eyes. When a person loves their fellow Jewish person, like helps them out, cares about them, advocates on their behalf, that's a we believe that that's a religious thing. In other words, if a person does things on behalf of his people, that's a very special thing. In other words, to do that, for a person to there's a rabbi that passed away, Rabbi Avigdor Miller. That was one of his themes. That, you know, there's some Jews that are anti-Semites. They complain about our own people, you know, and it grates on your ears because you believe that they're really kidding, but they'll say it. Oh, I can't stand there, you know, this and that. But that's not really a positive thing when there are people that speak highly of others and try to do things for others. There are some people that if they go outside and there's broken glass on the sidewalk in front of the shul, they pick it up and they care. That's a mitzvah. That's a wonderful thing because they care about everybody. There's something, a mat in front of the building somebody could trip on and somebody takes the time to do that, I look at that, what a pious person. I don't say the person that's praying in the synagogue is pious, but if you're concerned about your fellow person and you do something out of concern, that's what it's about. And so Hashem at this point just felt that Eliyahu wanted him to, in order to be the leader that he needed to, was lacking that, or he was trying to get that message, or at least that's the way many people learn. Yeah.
I hope I got this right. It was a story out of the Holocaust that somebody had a sitter, and they would only lend it for food.
Right.
And people would line up to give their piece of bread for just to be able to hold the sitter. And so somebody was complaining about, you know, how...
That's with Elie Wiesel, yes, the famous story.
He was. Well, what about all the people who gave their bread?
Half empty or half full. Right, absolutely. That's a terrific story. That's exactly that point. In other words, you have to be able to see the good in things. So let's start again from Yud. This is the... let's start from Tes. The Yavu Sham El Amara, just the incident with the cave. And keeping in mind that any interpretation we offer just is an option. There are many possibilities here and different levels of understanding. So he comes to the cave. Many people felt that his going to the cave was, just like Moshe Rabbeinu, really wanted to understand Hashem. There were things that he didn't, that Moshe Rabbeinu saw the troubles they had in Egypt, the afflictions. And so he didn't understand that. And so he needed to go to the cave to understand Hashem's plan for the world. Eliyahu also didn't understand, you know, why, how it was that so many people were worshiping idols. And after he did this great miracle, he has to run away for his life. And so, so to speak, they went to the cave to get their education, to try to understand Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu's going to the cave preceded the giving of the Torah, you know, like the... but there is this connection somehow to going to the cave. Some people just see it that a person should have private time where they do some introspection. The Muslim movement was that, where that people need to have time where they think their thoughts through, where they focus on things. Sometimes we get so busy, we never get a chance to work it out. We need our cave, so to speak, our place that we go to and quiet, and we talk to Hashem and we try to figure things out. We try to in the Muslim movement tried to set up Rabbi Israel Salanter tried to set up an actual building where people would go to, a Muslim house where they could just have quiet and focus on, you know, spiritual things and just take a moment and just think about what, you know, what's life about, what am I doing, just somehow we get so busy that we just don't always focus on where am I going, what do I need to do, and so we got to go back to the cave, so to speak. That's that idea of going to the cave. So the Yavusham Elmar, he went to the cave, where the idea of the cave is it's just you and Hashem. Sometimes with so many other people we get crowded, we can't think of it. He goes to the cave, and Hashem speaks to him, and he says, what you doing here? Why are you here? You're the prophet of the people. You don't belong here. You're needed. It could be Eliyahu, if you remember, he wanted to quit. He said, I'm finished my life's work. I'm ready to die, right? He said that. So Hashem said, you're not finished. We had that with Jacob, with Yaakov Avinu, that everything he went through, he thought he had enough, and he thought he was finished. Shem says, when you're alive, you're not finished. We get older, we want less aggravation, we want less trouble, we want things to be easy. It's okay to want that, but we have to be aware, as long as we are alive, that we're not finished. There are good things to accomplish. There's still things to do. That's just a message that, you know, but we're in good company. You know, if Eliyahu wanted to retire, and he didn't want to retire, he felt it was time for him to die. He felt if he couldn't do his mission anymore, okay. And we talked a little bit last week about that. So Eliyahu says, the reason I'm here, now, the question is, how does he answer the question why he's here? So his answer is, V'yomar, kana kenesi l'Hashem, I was very zealous for Hashem, Elokeitzvah, the God of the legions, ki azur b'secha, the reason I'm not with your people is because they left your covenant, B'nai Yisrael, and they destroyed Mizbechosecha, harasu your altars, Nehero, and they killed your prophets, Tavasani levadi, and I'm the only one left, Yivakshuas nafshi l'kai, and there's no more reason for me to... basically he's saying that I can't be effective anymore. I have no more job. My job was to influence the people, and I give up. You could learn that that's the answer. So Hashem wants to show him a vision. Or Hashem doesn't like the answer. Sometimes Hashem wants us to realize that our answer isn't a good answer. Because he doesn't really answer the question, if you look at that. Unless Hashem said, what are you doing here? So he said, I'm here because I'm running away. Is that his answer? I have nowhere else to go? Is that the... But I think it's more than that. In other words, the reason he's not with the people is that... So Hashem says, say, get down, go down. In other words, you need to get and stand by the mountain, Hashem, over. Hashem is going to pass by. Elio, in a certain way, was saying, I don't see what Hashem wants from me. So Hashem said, I will give you a vision of me. And the big wind came. Now, Eliyahu's exercise in winning over the people at Mount Carmel was one of these big, fancy miracles, with one of these big mountain breakers, one of the big, you know, the whole people were there. And he felt that if that didn't work, there's nothing else to try. If you can't reach the people through the big miracles, then how can you reach them? And we all want those big miracles, but the reality is it's that silent, continuous, steady voice, which is really what wins people over. So, and that's what Hashem is trying to say to him. You don't need to do any more of those big, fancy, you know, miracles. Hashem isn't always in those big, fancy miracles. And the spirit that breaks the mountains, that's pretty strong. And breaks the rust in Hashem. Lo baruch Hashem. Da'acha ruach rash. So at first you had the big, strong wind. Hashem wasn't in that wind. And after the wind, there was an earthquake. Lo barash Hashem. Hashem is not in the earthquake. Da'acha rash esh. And then there's the fire. Lo ba'esh Hashem. There's all these different powers that exist. Va'acha esh cold mamadaka. You have this cold mamadaka, first of all, the constant idea that Hashem works with humility. Hashem works with simplicity. It's not a coincidence that sometimes when things are very simple, we see a holiness to them. You know, some of the beauty of the Pesach Seder is it's very simple. You know, the matzah and bread and potatoes, meat and potatoes, and you enjoy it like you do a big fancy banquet, because it's just sometimes it's, even though it takes a lot of work, but I'm just saying it, sometimes it's the simplicity of it that you feel something special. You know, a little matzah and cream cheese, it's, you know, sometimes that's the best breakfast you could have. You know, where it's just a simple. So it's this they call it a still voice. I think it means more like a constant voice or a thin voice. Verse 13, so he covered his face. That's a sign of humility. That's also, we wrap ourselves. The prayer, we kind of wrap ourselves. We cover ourselves. But Yesu Yamed Pesach Amar, and he went out and he stood by the entrance. Dinei Lav. So now Eliyahu got Hashem was trying to give him a message. And most people learn that he still didn't get it, because Hashem says to him, so what you doing here? And Eliyahu gives the exact same answer. 14, he doesn't change. He didn't get it, I guess. And so Hashem kind of says, if you didn't get it, you didn't change, then I guess it's time to retire. And he tells him to appoint his successor. This is just one way to learn. I'm sure there are other ways to learn it. It's just interesting. Like it takes a real study to try to say, you know, what went on over here. But Hashem repeats the question and says, "What are you doing here? Like, don't you see that you got to be that still small voice, and that there's a reason to do that?" And Eliyahu isn't content with the small voice. He says, "No, I want to be zealous for the Lord." Right? Hashem says, you can't. Zealousness doesn't always work. Sometimes you need to just. There's a time and a place for zealousness, and then there's a time for that small voice. I remembered I had a relative that was married out of the faith, and it was a cousin of mine who I was close with, and I was very upset when I found out that they were planning on doing. Since then, they've been divorced, of course. I think. He said he should have listened to his cousin, the rabbi, you know. But at the time, I wanted to try to talk him out of it. And so I called up a rabbi, and I said, what should I do? And this was a well-known, famous rabbi, and it was Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, famous, wise, older man. And he said to me, the same way there's a mitzvah to say something that'll be listened to, there's a mitzvah not to say something that won't be listened to. And he had my number. I mean, this guy had, you know, had a wedding date, and it was close to the day. It was, and I don't believe I knew. He kind of asked me, you know, what would I be effective? That I imagined was our relationship such that he would have said, "Oh, I'm not supposed to marry out of the faith. Thank you for telling me. Goodbye. Let's call it off." That wasn't what was going to happen. And so sometimes a person has to know when. You know, when to be zealous and when to just be the constant voice. And, you know, they know, he knew if he wanted to discuss it with me that he would have gotten my point of view. And my question was I obligated to rebuke him? And they felt that wasn't, you know, the place or the... Sure, if when it was early, if I could have influenced him, I would have tried. But over here, Eliyahu still wants to go with zealousness. And so Hashem... Most people learn it anyway. Hashem is telling him that now it's time. If you look at this verse 15, "V'yomer Hashem, Leich shuv ledarchecha, go back from your way." In other words, go return, go change, or go. But what he tells him, he gives him a new mission. Like Eliyahu said, I'm done with the Jewish people. So some people say, Hashem says, you think the Jewish people are bad? I'll send you to the Goyim. You'll see what it is. He sends him to Damascus. Go to Syria. And you will go and you have a job to appoint a new leader for Aram. And that was part of his mission. Aram was the enemy of the Jewish people. Sometimes it's very interesting. Sometimes people are influenced by what happens by their fellow Jews, by what happens in the synagogue, and then sometimes people are influenced by what happens with Gentiles. We're going to see that Achav, here Eliyahu came to him and tried by all means to get him to change, and it wasn't so effective. But now that Aram, who was the foreign army, would come, perhaps that would be effective. We find that at the time of Haman, that the Jewish people did tremendous tshuva. And it mentions that the prophets were trying for years to get the Jewish people to change. It didn't affect anything. All of a sudden, Haman came on the scene. Everybody went. So there are different ways to reach people. Sometimes they'll hear it from their fellow Jew, from their family, and other times we're not the messenger. The messenger will come from the outside. So Hashem is kind of telling Eliyahu, you're right, maybe you aren't the one to deliver the message. I will send a ram to attack the Jewish people, and we will see if maybe that will work. Maybe that will change it. So that's number one. Ve'es Yehu ben Nimshi Timshech l'melech ha'Yisrael. And it's time for a leadership change. There'll be a new king of Israel. And Ve'es Elisha ben Shaphat me'evo mechola Timshech l'navi. And it's time for you to appoint a successor. Sometimes Eliyahu perhaps felt that he had finished his mission, but if you don't have a successor, then you're not finished. There's a very big Hasidus that exists, and they didn't appoint the new Rebbe to take over from the old Rebbe, and they're in disarray, and it's terrible because they have nobody to. They didn't appoint a successor, and that's an awful thing. And people. Sometimes that's the person's focus should be that the next generation should continue, you know, should know how to. So Hashem is saying, you're not finished yet. You can't go. We need another Eliyahu. And so he's told even who that will be. That's the next great prophet to appear on the scene. I don't know why. Not that many people know about Elisha. You know, everybody knows Elijah. He has top billing. But Elisha was also one of our all-time greats, and we're going to talk about him. But Eliyahu is instructed to make sure that there'll be another prophet that'll take over. 17. And now he begins to kind of predict a little bit about the future, and he tells him the following. He says, V'hayu anim le'mecherev chazoil yomis Yehu. And those that will, of the 10 tribes that had sinned, those that aren't killed in the wars with the Gentiles, they will be killed when the new king takes over. In other words, the evil that you witness will disappear. There'll be a new, different times will come, different things will happen. 18. And you say there's nobody left, there'll be 7,000. And these 7,000 are people that remained faithful. Kol ha-brachai mesher lo koru le-baal. All of the knees of people that didn't bow down to the Baal. The kol ha-pah sher lo nashaklo. And they didn't kiss the idol. There were a lot of people that kissed the idol. They, I don't know if they worshipped it, but they showed respect for it. And so those that didn't do that, they will be the nucleus for the people. And most of us come from those 7,000. So there's always your core group of people that are doing the right thing. And so Eliyahu says there's nobody left. Hashem says, no, there's going to be a core group. 19. So he left the desert, he left the cave, and sure enough, he runs into his disciple. He finds Elisha ben Shaphat. Elisha was busy plowing. He was busy working. He hadn't really thought he would become a prophet. He wasn't looking. He was his disciple, but he at this moment is plowing his field. Shnei Masit Smidim. He's got 12 cows in front of him. Now there's a symbolism in the 12 cows, and the 12 is the number for the Jewish people, the 12 tribes. V'u'b'shnei Masit, and he was with the 12th. V'yavur Eliyahu Elav. And Eliyahu sees him, and Vayashlech Adarto Elov. One of the things we see about prophets, sometimes they do a visual. If you remember, when the head of the Jewish people, Rechavim, had, I guess it was Shlomo, when Hashem Hashem predicted that he would, it was Yeravim ben Nevat, that Hashem predicted that he would tear away from the Jewish people, the 10 tribes. He ripped the garment, so to speak, like he tore it away. We had that before, the remember who did the tearing. But sometimes there's a visual together with the prophecy. So over here, when Eliyahu designates his successor, he puts his wrap on him. That's the symbolism. We often find the word smicha, where it says Moshe Rabbeinu put his hands on Yehoshua. This is another form of that, like he put his wrap on him. It's just interesting, like this is almost described as he threw it on him. Like here he's minding his own business, he's plowing, and all of a sudden, whoops, you know, he tosses the mantle on him. It's just the Hebrew actually says he threw it on him, the Yashlech. We don't know if he expected it, he didn't expect it, but he understood the symbolism. Right away, when he got the mantle, Vayazav Esabokko, he said, no more cows for me. Now, he felt the divine presence. He felt the calling, the mission. And that's the idea. A person wraps himself in his mission. Again, the Christians, they took, you know, you put on the collar, so to speak. You know, they stole that in the ideas from Tanakh. Like, if you're a person of God, you have to wear the collar, right? You have to wear the wrap, you know. But they missed the point over here, which is that... The master transfers the things that he's learned to his disciple. And so he puts his wrap on him, means that he teaches him, he gives him his experience. He gives him he wraps him in the cloak that he's worn. The disciple doesn't need to make the same mistakes. And so he takes the cloak of his master. He takes the thing that protected his master, what his master had learned. And so he leaves the cows for Yoratzachre Eliyahu. And it's interesting, he doesn't walk after Eliyahu, he runs after him. Vayomer, Eshkena L'Avil Imo. Now, it's an interesting thing. He wants to say, can I say goodbye to my parents?
That's
Jesus. He said, Eshkena L'Avil Imo V'Elchachre. He said, I want the job, but is it okay? Will I miss out if I let them know? His parents probably be wondering where he was. You know, he was out in the field with the cows, and all of a sudden he's going to disappear. You know, so he said, "Should I go and tell them?" He said, "Of course." Shuv kimas yisula. What do you think? I'm going to take you away from your parents? Like this is and this again, there are many interpretations of what it means. You know, maasi, what did I do to you? In other words, he could be that. He was explaining to him. So Elisha does that. Yashim Achor, he goes home. Yichak has a semud, and then he comes back to Eliyahu, and he wants to celebrate. He realizes the significance of being a prophet. Some people, they're given a job, they don't want the job, and sometimes we're afraid of the job, but we have to celebrate it if we get it. In other words, there are certain jobs that are very difficult, but if we get it, so he wanted to show that he was grateful that Hashem had chosen him for this mission to be the prophet after Eliyahu. So he brings, he slaughters the oxen, ubekli bakar, bishalom habasar, and he cooks the meat. Some people always joke about Jews and food, and there's a certain truth to that, that, having food, there's a significance to having food. You know, that there's a, when you we sit down and you break bread, that definitely, it allows things to sink in, and it makes it concrete, and it develops a certain camaraderie. There's something special, what we call the Sudas Mitzvah, you know, like, I think in America, because of fast food, you kind of lose that, you know, you grab a bite to eat. I remember we used to sometimes in between classes we'd grab a piece of pizza or we'd grab a sandwich, and my Rebbeim, the European born, they really bothered them that we could just eat in the street. Yeah. You know, like, you know, just eat on the run, like you're eating a meal. Like to them, a meal was important. You had to sit down to a meal. You know, even when we grew up, our family had a set time to eat, and everybody had to be there, and they had to sit down around the table. And I wish that it would be that way with my children. I can't tell you that it is. We're all too busy. We all have different hours. This one comes after, you know, has piano lessons, and this one has this. And so we don't always have it where now it's supper time. But you know something? Growing up, we enjoyed that because we knew that our family was together for supper. And we knew that we would all sit down around the table, and that brought us together. And, you know, like I said, we try to have you know, but it's there's something special about having the food together, having a meal together, and but our culture makes us so busy that sometimes we just grab a bite to eat. We just grab it and run. And, you know, we're in the car, we're running, and the food is made. You know, put it in your mouth, you've eaten. And it's not a total replacement for a real meal. So over here, he says, all right, you know, we have to celebrate this, and he makes the steaks. It's often hard for us to envision. I have a hard time envisioning just, you know, till you slaughter an animal and you skin it and you soak it and you salt it and you cook it. Like, how do you have a meal? It takes hours. And they make it seem like, you know, it takes a few minutes. No, he's right there. It all takes place in one verse. Eliyahu throws the mantle on him. He takes, oh, okay, let's have a big steak party. He slaughters the cows and invites all the people, and before you know it, the Yochelu. But that's okay. In other words, it's okay. We have to envision that it took a day, but the verse doesn't have to go into the details about the skinning and the, you know, all the work that went in. And so after he has this party to celebrate, he goes after Eliyahu. And Bishorsehu. And here he does, the word shoris means like he's an apprentice. He apprentices with Eliyahu. And that's by working closely with Eliyahu, he would pick up on the nuances of what was needed.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.